The 1995 Sunstone Symposium presents session number 335, See You in 3 Hours, a look back at 15 years of the consolidated meeting schedule. A panel including Rebecca Chandler, Toby Pingree, Jerry Hurd, and Lou Chandler.
And see if we can make some suggestions, not that we have any power to make any actual changes, but you never know who could be listening. And maybe some suggestions that would work in local wards and local stakes to at least help us deal with the situation that we find ourselves in now. When the consolidated meeting schedule went into effect, I was in exactly the situation that stood best to benefit from it. I had 5 children at home. 3 of them were tiny. We had a reluctant car. We live in Cleveland where the weather is always problematic. I was driving 25 minutes to church meetings several times a week. And my memories of Sunday morning were that my husband would get up and use the shower and get dressed, and someone would pick him up and take him to priesthood meeting. And I was left to deal with the 5 children and the reluctant automobile. And you just have to pick up someone else whose husband had picked my husband up to take him to priesthood meeting, where they could do that priesthood stuff that men do when they go to that place. And those of us who were left to deal with the children and the long trek out to church dealt with what all women have always dealt with, trying to get their families off to church. It was not an easy situation, and when my sister, who was in one of the pilot stakes that was experimenting with the new schedule, wrote to me gleefully that she didn't have to leave for church until 11 o'clock in the morning, that her husband was home with her, that they had breakfast together, that they left for church together, that they were home by 2 and the whole thing was all over with for the entire week, I was ecstatic. I was editor of our ward newsletter at the time, and I was writing editorials saying, yes, 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 it's coming, and here's what I'm hearing about it, and won't this be great? And I was very, very pleased when it was announced that churchwide we were going to adopt this format. It didn't take long to realize that every solution does breed problems, and I guess the first one that hit us was what happened to our ward relief society. By the time they pulled enough people out of Relief Society to staff primary and young women, there was almost no one left to attend Relief Society. I was at least initially very pleased that working women and women who were home with their families were on an equal footing, because I had always felt that the weekday Relief Society put some sisters in a special category and that those of us who worked were relegated to a second-class status. Here again, we had a problem where many, many women were not able to participate fully in Relief Society or be a part of it at all, and the one group of sisters were more a part of the ward, but there was another very large group of sisters who still were relegated to a situation where they couldn't really participate with adults. I wrote about my memories of primary because after years of dealing with the block schedule and just trying to cope with sort of turnover in staff and trying to take turns and work with the schedule because the Brethren wanted us to and because it did have clear advantages, I attended a panel here at Sunstone that had three sisters who spoke of their experience in primary, and they eventually wound up writing the presentation up in this issue of Dialogue. The article that was most compelling to me was by Levina, who spoke from a position of having been in primary for 11 years, teaching the Sunbeam class and playing the piano all that time, and from her position as a primary worker, was able to articulate many issues that I was only vaguely aware of because I was not a primary worker. And it led me to think about the experience I was having in primary and to contrast it to the experience that my children were having. I tried to recount those in this article and tried to capture the very positive memories I had of going to primary at 10 o'clock in the morning on a weekday if it was the summertime, or right after school if it was during the school year, of having the building all to ourselves, of having it quiet and peaceful. I see so many heads nodding. Yes, I remember that too. The reverence that they instilled in us, how fortunate we felt to have the chapel all to ourselves. The fact that because it was on the weekday, we could do all kinds of activities. Once we had that very quiet opening exercise, we went to classes. We really were vigorously engaged in things that we were doing, the things that we learned. I remember the Mary Miss program, which at the time was called a homemaking program. But we were, and that should bother me, I think, because, it's so sexist. But it sounds better to me today than Mary Miss does. I keep thinking of Lynn Anderson, who says we should call the boys Jolly Joes, for a parallel experience. But we were taught to knit, and we were taught to cross stitch, and we were taught to sew, and we were taught to crochet, and we were able to do things in primary because it was on a weekday. And I contrast that with the experience my children have had in a sterile multi-purpose area on metal folding chairs with all kinds of other things going on in the building for an hour and 50 minutes where they're essentially being warehoused because other meetings are going on and children aren't appropriate in those meetings. And then adults who would perhaps prefer to be with other adults are being asked to try and contain them, contain their activity, and keep them busy even though it's Sunday and there are so many activities that are inappropriate for them to be participating in. My memories of junior Sunday school are every bit as positive as my memories of primary. There was a junior Sunday school room that was always there, and it was always furnished with junior Sunday school furniture, and it made a statement that junior Sunday school mattered and that children mattered. It had little miniature pews that were graduated as you went back. It was sort of a long, narrow room, and it had a miniature podium like this that children could stand at. I remember as I got old enough to go to senior Sunday school, we met with everybody else down in the main meeting hall. We sat with our classes and we sat with our teachers. It was unabashedly didactic. We were there to learn hymns. We had a hymn of the month, and we sang that hymn for 4 or 5 weeks until we knew it cold. We could stand up, sing it from memory, sing it in harmony, sing it in other languages. We had 2.5-minute talks, which were not supposed to be inspiring. They were simply supposed to give kids the experience of learning how to stand on their feet and do what we're all doing here now. The church trained us to do these things we're doing now. It's on stone. I think that's an interesting irony. But I remember feeling very positive about my experience both in junior Sunday school and later in senior Sunday school. Later, I was able to realize that while the senior Sunday school had the largest, senior Sunday school and junior Sunday school combined, that Sunday morning meeting had the largest group of ward members attending, it often did not include mothers. Mothers often sent their husbands to priesthood meeting and sent their children to Sunday school and stayed home and caught their breath and cooked dinner. And that was fine. Nobody cared about that. In fact, that turned up in the Kimball biography with all kinds of apologies. But it was a very common pattern. And then after a Sunday dinner and a leisurely Sunday afternoon, some members of the family went back to sacrament meeting and others did not. I do not remember lots of crying children in sacrament meeting. For one thing, there was a cry room. And if people brought little children who were not able to sit through the meeting, they were taken to a room where they could make as much noise as they wanted to make without disturbing the rest of us. Teenagers went. We took dates sometimes. If you were dating somebody and he took you to his ward, well, you know, he was willing to show you off a little bit and you could kind of check things out and people would check you out. I remember some wonderful sacrament meetings. I remember missionary farewells. Lots of missionary farewells. Ward hopping was fine. You could go to another ward. Nobody thought that was a terrible thing to do. Lou and I shared an experience because we sang in the East High a cappella choir when we were growing up, and we spent our whole senior year of high school traveling from ward to ward and putting on the whole sacrament meeting, and nobody thought that was an inappropriate way to have sacrament meeting. So I just remember all of this positively, and I remember going because I wanted to go. No one ever dragged me to church. I liked it there. It was compounded by the fact that I had lovely buildings to meet in. I met my primary years in the North 21st Ward that's since been torn down on the avenues, and Yale Second Ward where I spent my youth with a beautiful stained glass window in the front and lots of light, lots of windows on the sides. It was a wonderful, positive experience, and I loved it. And it created, I think, an emotional bond with my Mormon heritage that my children can't even guess at, because they have simply not had that experience living in the mission field, meeting in a standard block meeting plan, in a standard block meeting house, I guess we could call it. I realize that to talk about the ambience involved, the quality of the worship, is to bring up issues that many Mormons don't even consider important. We have a pioneer heritage that says, well, the pioneers walked across the plains, and they dealt with inconvenience, and they dealt with anesthetic surroundings sometimes, so this is part of our sort of commitment as members of the church to just deal with this. And I think we sometimes are blinded by our own legacy and take on challenges that don't need to be there and make sacrifices that don't make any kind of sense just because we want to show that we're made of pioneer stuff, too, and we're willing to do whatever they ask us to do. And in this case, what it is endure 3 hours of a meeting schedule in an ugly building. So that's one issue that I realize many people do not even see as an important part of the whole situation that we've created for ourselves. The other one is a bigger concern to me, and that is the lack of accessibility that the block schedule has created for many, many families. About a month ago, our ward kicked off a missionary push. Is this church-wide? Are we all earning missionary awards right now, or is this just my stake? we're supposed to have the missionaries over for dinner, and we're supposed to place certain numbers of Books of Mormons, and we're supposed to save money for them. All right. It's a big thing going on in my ward right now, and we're supposed to earn, actually, awards, and we're going to get recognized in sacrament meeting if we do all of this. To convince us that anyone could do this, a young sister in our ward was the kickoff speaker, and she wanted to convince us that anyone can be a missionary. And she did it by telling how she herself joined the church. She joined the church because a little girl in her neighborhood didn't want to go to Mary Miss alone. And this little girl invited her to go to Mary Miss, and she in turn invited some of her siblings to go along. And eventually parents came to sacrament meeting to see the primary program, and eventually the missionaries met with them, and eventually they all joined the church. And the body count was something like 5 missionaries, 4 temple marriages, 23 kids born in the covenant, and everybody living happily ever after, all because one Mary Miss didn't want to go to church alone and see we could all do this. And I listened to this, and I thought, that's wonderful. But I also thought how rare that would be now, that if a little child doesn't want to go to primary alone, that she could invite a neighbor to come with her. How many kids would want to go with another family and spend 3 hours, 2 of which to them? And another concern for me, and a very big one, because I grew up in part member family, but my father was inactive most of my growing up. And we made a lot of compromises. My mother taught primary. She went to Relief Society. We were sent to Sunday school. There were plenty of kids in my situation. I chose, when I was old enough to make these decisions for myself, to go to sacrament meeting. I hadn't gone before I was 12 years old. I was never taken to sacrament meeting. But I wanted to be there because of these good experiences I had had, and many of us grew up to be members of the church, to go on missions, to raise active LDS families. And it seems to me that we are losing a whole category of children especially, but men and women as well, who cannot make those kinds of compromises in religiously divided families. It's an all-or-nothing proposition now. You go to church, and you're there for the whole time, and the entire family goes, or nobody goes at all. And that issue of accessibility is one that I worry about a lot. I realize when I wrote the article, and I acknowledge it here, that a lot of what I miss about my experience growing up in the church has to do with the way the world has changed. I know that having weekday primary and weekday Relief Society was dependent on many women who were home with their families and who could staff these organizations, and I know we can't change that now. But I think we do need to look at the problems we're addressing and the solutions we've proposed and look to see if we have created other problems that, in fact, are causing more problems than the solutions were meant to address in the first place. See if we can't find ways to look at what is working and what is not working and look at the people who are being affected and maybe come up with some creative solutions that would include more people and make the quality of our worship a more meaningful one. Other panel members have other issues with the block schedule, and then we all have some suggestions, and then we'll want to hear from you, your experiences and your suggestions as well. So I'll turn the time over to my sister-in-law and dear friend, Lou Chandler.
I'm Lou. I live in Philadelphia, or Filthydelphia, as my kids used to call it, before they knew that it fit. Let's see, introduction. I recently published an article in Dialogue called Why is the Church Perceived to be a Cult, which has nothing to do with this. My business is a consulting firm that specializes in meeting production and presentation consulting, and that does color a little bit of what I am going to mention today. When the consolidated schedule happened, it was a big change. I think it was probably one of the larger changes that the church has made that has affected us rather dramatically. The interesting thing is that no matter how nostalgic some of us may be about the way things used to be, most of us are not willing to go back to it. I did a little survey of people in my ward, and most of them did not know that this was for Sunstone, and most of them didn't know that what Sunstone was, actually. So when I said I was going to participate in a panel on the consolidated schedule, it sort of struck fear and terror into their hearts that, well, they're not going to change it, are they? They're not going to put it back. I said, no. I'm not doing anything official at all. So it was interesting. Some of the results of the survey were that most people liked it, or they were tolerating of it. those that didn't like it didn't want to go back to the way it was. So change is inevitable. The only thing constant in life is change. And I think we're going to see more and more changes as the church becomes more and more of a worldwide church. And I think that's why it's important for us to discuss things like this, to see how we have adapted to change and how we might adapt to change in the future. Okay, so the issue is how we creatively adapt to change. And the question is not what we want. The question is why we would want that, how important is that, and how can we get a similar benefit in another creative way? So, do you get my point? The issue isn't, gee, I wish we could do the primary again the way we did. Well, we can't. No ifs, ands, or buts. But, you know, I've most of my existence in Philadelphia has been as my mother-in-law's here. As the only mother of small children who are not small anymore, but the only mother who had a full-time career outside the home. And the reason this is relevant is that I got so many people saying, you should be at home, instead of saying, what is the core value of being at home? And how can we compensate for what we may be missing in other ways? So I would ask, what is the core value, or what was the core value associated with the consolidated schedule? And how important are those things? And how can we accomplish the same things in a more creative way? Okay, so this survey I did, it was mostly ward members of Valley Forge Ward in the East. Not statistically significant, only about 25 respondents, so it's a very little value, but it gave me a few ideas. As I said, most liked it. Most liked it because it gave more family time. On the downside, most complaints pertained to two things, essentially. One, lack of time for social gathering, lack of time for building community. And I'll tell you, in the East, where you travel, sometimes a half an hour to get to church, that's an important thing. The second thing was a decline in meeting quality. A decline in meeting quality. I'll get into what I think that means. In terms of which groups or organizations have been most affected, most of them said the primary has been severely affected, by far. Others most severely affected, of course, the Sunday school. And what surprised me was sacrament. I thought I was the only one that thought that sacrament meeting was less wonderful than it was before. So the biggest losses, I think, based on the survey and my own feelings and my own profession, is to me the quality of spirituality and interest in sacrament meeting and other meetings. And I think that one of the largest things, one of the core things that has contributed to that, is, for heaven's sakes, we, as Becky said, we all learned how to talk. Many of us learned how to give good speeches from doing 2.5-minute talks in front of the whole Sunday school. Growing up, that was a big testimony. People talked about how they were able to do X, Y, or Z, and they credited the fact that they learned, the church taught them to speak in 2.5-minute talk venues. We also had speech contests. Big deal. Speech contests in MIA. We don't do that anymore. The other biggest loss, and if any of you have read Becky's article, really points out the fact that the children's program, I think, has less than half of the value that it had before. Let me share with you a couple of possible ways that that I think we could achieve some of the same benefit from before in a new way. You know, when they first instituted the consolidated schedule, it did not include a weekday get-together for mutual. And they figured out pretty quick that I guess we better do that after all. So now, I don't know how it is for you guys, but for us, does everybody have a weekday mutual thing? But we didn't do anything about the primary. So what if we had a primary summer camp? Maybe a week-long primary summer camp. Maybe two sessions offered. One of the things that came up in the survey was that teenage girls don't get to work in the primary anymore, and they enjoyed that. That was a wonderful opportunity for teenage kids to begin having a calling in the church and feel like they were contributing something important. Well, so, again, we could have an opportunity for teenage kids to participate with these little kids in a stake-sponsored primary summer camp. In the East, there are all these Bible school, summer Bible school things that work really nicely. I've been wanting to send my kids to them. They're really wonderful. Why can't we do that? Let's see. And this is my big bugaboo, and then I will sit down. Why? Why can't we teach people how to speak anymore? The dismal nature of our sacrament meetings in Valley Forge Ward are unbelievable. My son just went to, especially for youth, in Ithaca, New York. And the first Sunday that he was back, he leaned over to my husband Clay and said, "Now that I've been to EFY, I recognize how really boring this sacrament meeting is. It's horrible. I mean, everybody means well, but it is horrible. We need to start teaching our kids how to speak. We need to make a big deal about start having speech contests again in Mutual and make a really big deal about it and have a curriculum for teaching them how to speak and have a big deal playoff with audiences for this speech contest. Anything to get these kids to start developing this skill, which will not only benefit sacrament meetings in the future, it'll benefit them professionally. Of course, it'll benefit Sunstone, too. Let's see. Another thing that we need to teach them in that context, I believe, is audience skills. We don't teach audience skills anymore. We don't teach our children that it's impolite to stand up and leave in the middle of a speech. We don't teach them that the audience literally contributes as much to the spirit in the room as the speaker does. That the spirit, the ambient spirit in the room, is a three-way thing. It's not just, "Heavenly Father, bless us with thy spirit." Because I, as a speaker, have a spirit that I impart to you. As audience, you all have a spirit that you impart to me. Those of us who have spoken in sacrament meeting lately, have you ever noticed how many eyes are on you? Have you noticed? Almost none. They're all looking down, taking care of kids, reading the scriptures, falling asleep. So anyway, we need speaking skills, we need audience skills, and I think we need to start doing that as a core thing in Mutual. So that's my A number one thing, second to primary. I'm out of time. Okay. I am going to, let me just mention three or four things that came from the survey real quickly. A decent, adequate primary room would be nice. Opening exercises in MIA, where we have song practice in MIA at least, an opening exercise there, that would be nice. Longer time in between classes. Somebody suggested that we cut Relief Society and Priesthood to a monthly meeting. Maybe, you know, you have Sunday school, three Sundays, and one Sunday you have Priesthood and Relief Society. And maybe in sacrament meeting you have one well-developed speech as opposed to 90. So there you have it.
I'm Jerry Hurd, and how much time do I have? Okay, thank you. I'm Jerry Hurd. I'm mostly known, at least in this context, for the books on women in the scripture that I have written. So I'm not sure why I've been asked to speak on this subject, except that I think it's also well known that I have an opinion on everything. So here I am. Actually, it's my experience that everyone that I know of has an opinion on the Block program, and so I feel it's quite a privilege to be allowed to actually speak on the subject, because merely everyone that I know has not been asked to do that, even though they have an opinion. So I'll put it very succinctly what my opinion is. I don't want to go back to having two meetings on Sunday and one meeting on every other day of the week. On the other hand, I have never been a fan of the three-hour Block program, the consolidated meeting schedule. Now, before I begin to sound like a chronic malcontent who cannot be pleased with anything, let me fill in a little bit about why I feel as I do. Like some of the others before you that have been speaking before me, I have some very fond memories of the old program. Since primary is a topic, let me mention that when I was in the early grades of grade school, growing up in Ammon, Idaho, if anyone knows where that is, we had release time primary. that's the reaction I get to everybody. Nobody can believe that. On Thursday afternoon, school let out an hour early, and our school teachers lined us up and marched us across the street to the church. We could do that because that community was virtually 100% LDS. And so, but by the time I was in the fourth grade, what was then called the Atomic Energy Commission had moved in and put in a reactor testing site, and that literally changed that community almost overnight. And, of course, one of the casualties immediately was release time primary. Nobody could believe that. When we went to the Block system, under the Block program in the church, I think there was a recognition that things had changed, just as, you know, release time primary had to go because things had changed. And I think that was a good recognition that our lives had changed. We needed some other kind of way to handle our meetings or to think about our meetings. But I don't think that the three-hour Block was ever people-friendly. I think of it as being building-friendly. The three-hour Block allows us to use our buildings very efficiently. How else could we pack as many as four wards into one building except by using that Block system? But it's not people friendly. Think of the number of people who find 3 hours difficult. Children, people who take care of children, the elderly, the infirm, and anyone with a short attention span. Now, if that doesn't cover you, you are truly, you know, an exceptional person. And so it really is not very very people-friendly in a lot of ways. And I think that maybe it is time, after 15 years, I was sort of appalled to realize that it had been that long, that we ought to look at that and think about that again. And if we're going to do it, if we're going to rethink that meeting schedule, then I think we have to get back to basics. And I think we need to ask ourselves, why do we come together on Sunday? What is the purpose? What is the reason that we do that? There may be others, but I quickly identified four. I think we come together to take the sacrament. We come together to worship. We come together to build community. And I think we come together to teach and learn from each other. So how does the three-hour Block stack up against those? We do the sacrament very well. That's fine. I think that worship is a little bit up to the individual. We have all experienced meetings where we thought it was wonderful and someone who was sitting right next to us on the bench thought it was boring. I think we bring a worshipful attitude to us, to the meeting, and although I believe in the ambiance that Becky was talking about, and we can do things to build ambiance, I think worship is sort of an individual responsibility. Community building, however, if we really believe that our business is building a Zion society, we can't do that individually. We need to work together. We need interaction with each other in order to do that. And that's where I see the block program really failing. I think we do okay teaching and learning. I have some problems with that, but it mostly has to do with the manuals, not the time period. So I think that's, you know, what we need to think about when we're doing that. As I said, I feel privileged to have been asked to talk on this subject, but since I have been given the privilege, I think there's a responsibility. And so I'd like to throw out not solutions, but three areas that I think we need to think about if we're going to rethink this, just to throw out for the discussion very quickly. One thing that I have heard spoken of over and over again when people talk about the block program is they say, well, let's eliminate Sunday school, cut it to 2 hours, just have sacrament and our Relief Society priesthood meeting. I am not in favor of that. And the reason I am not in favor of dropping Sunday school is that that is the only place in the church where we formally have interaction between men and women. And I think we need more interaction, not less. Now, I admit that in some wards, there's very little interaction between men and women, even in the discussions in Sunday school, but there is no interaction anywhere else or even a possibility of it. And so I am not in favor of dropping the Sunday school out. I think we ought to look at the possibility of providing more flexibility in when and where people can attend church. Now, I because I grew up in this little community in Ammon, Idaho, I see real value in saying to people who live in one geographical area that you need to make a unit and learn to work with each other regardless of your differences. And yet our society has become so mobile that I'm not sure that really works any more than release time primary works. Myself, because of business, I am gone a third of the time so that I cannot be in my ward a third of the time. Many people I know have two homes, so they literally live in more than one place. And I think it doesn't make sense to say to people that if you live in an area, you must attend church this time and no other time because of work schedules and other things. I think that puts a great imposition on a lot of people, and we need to look at that. The reason I thought about this is that when we were living in the East, our son attended Catholic high school because they had a very good arts program. And I was a little startled when he started this Catholic high school that they routinely scheduled school events and practices on Sunday. And I sort of gently asked why at one point, and they looked at me sort of puzzled and said, well, you can go to Mass Saturday, midnight, early in the morning, late at night, find a time, you know, it doesn't matter. And I think there is something to be said for that kind of flexibility. We might look at that. I think we also need to look at the possibility of building community across ward and stake boundaries. I think there would be some real value to that. When we were living in Portland, Oregon, I was asked by a friend to attend Hebrew classes at the Jewish Community Center. And I was quite intrigued with the fact that the Jewish community not only had built synagogues in Portland area, but they had a community center where people came. There was a very well-known choir that met there and practiced and went out. They had a symphony orchestra that people from all across the city had comes to the center to participate in. There were sports events. There were the Hebrew classes. There were lots of things where people across the Jewish community could come together and share and bond. And people who were in this Jewish orchestra that met at that place had lifelong friendships. I think that kind of reaching across boundaries citywide, in the case of this Jewish center, if we could do that as Mormons, it would truly build our community, and they certainly had a very strong community. So with humility, I offer that, and hope we have some additional discussion on the subject. Thank you.
I'm Toby Pingree. I live in Walnut Creek, California, and have lived in other parts of the country in my experience in the church, and I'm honored to be asked to comment on this consolidated meeting schedule. As you'll see by my paper, I think it's had quite an impact on us and how the church is part of our lives. I've written this out, which I rarely do. I'm usually one who speaks from just notes. But I sat at the keyboard a couple of weeks ago, and this sort of flowed out about what it used to be like and what it's like now, and maybe why. That's what I tried to talk about. And as you see, I kind of amplify my view of the consolidated meeting schedule as something broader in the church, that that we don't do as much together, we don't demand as much of church members as we did, and you'll see why. And I'll kind of finish up with a story that I'll do ad-libbing. I look back at 15 years of the consolidated meeting schedule, personal experience before consolidation, a Salt Lake ward. For the first 21 years of my life, I belonged to a typical Salt Lake ward, West Ensign ward, that's now called Ensign First. The building where we met still stands on the northeast corner of 9th Avenue and D Street, across the street from the LDS Hospital in the Avenue section of Salt Lake. The ward area covered less than a square mile. The members were economically, socially, and educationally in the upper strata of the Salt Lake populace. Most were born into the church, and Heber J. Grant was counted among the flock along with several of his daughters, grandchildren, and great-grandchildren. The church meeting schedule was typical of that era and consumed 4 hours of each Sunday and 5 hours during the week. The Sabbath started with priesthood meeting at 9 a.m. for males 12 and over, followed by Sunday school from 10:30 to noon. Then there was a break of 5 hours until sacrament meeting from 5 until 6:30 p.m. Tuesday afternoon was primary from 3:30 to 5. MIA met from 7:30 to 9 p.m. on Tuesday evening, and Relief Society met from 10 a.m. to noon on Thursday. The relatively long hours of church meetings coupled with minimum travel time to the chapel allowed most members to enjoy a variety of activities not currently in church programs. In Sunday school, we had opening exercises for 45 minutes where we learned to sing the hymns of the Restoration and song practice, listen to children over 8, give 2.5-minute talks, and partake of the sacrament before filing out row by row to class. At one time, we even had a small orchestra that played in Sunday school. The length of sacrament meeting allowed 10 minutes for youth speakers, more extensive treatment of gospel subjects by representative council and other doctrinal authorities. On one occasion, the ward was favored with a discourse reminding us of the blessings which came from our form of government. The order delivering the message was a member of the Quorum of the Twelve, and his remarks lasted for over an hour one warm July Sabbath. Missionary farewells usually exceeded the 9-minute time limit, as departing missionaries could bask in the extended eulogies about themselves. The meetings during the week also provided extended church activities. Primary could involve games and social activities as well as lessons. MIA was the occasion for plays and road shows, along with opening exercises that included individual music and oratory to go with congregational singing. I never attended Relief Society, but I have the impression from having heard my mother dedicate a month of preparation to get ready to teach a lesson on the cultural refinement that this women's organization offered a more extensive program than we see today. More frequent visits to the meeting house and longer hours spent while there naturally generated increased social interaction. Ward members seemed well aware of each other and the goings-on in the lives of members of all ages. We got to know each other when talking in the foyer, going to and from classes, walking to parked cars, as well as during the meetings and activities. A branch in the mission field. A week before my 21st birthday, my church meeting experience dramatically changed. I went to Central America on a mission and spent 27 of the next 30 months attending the only church unit in the capital city of Guatemala. The church had been active in the country for about 5 years, and branch membership was less than 200. Meeting schedule was virtually the same as that of West Ensign Ward in Salt Lake, but the outcomes were dramatically different. Like most church units in countries where the church is new, the members had limited resources. Almost all had to walk or ride public transportation to get to church. This required an hour or more in transit and a significant cash outlay. The result was that most members attended only once on Sunday in the morning or afternoon. Participation at the weekday meetings was likewise limited. The relative cost of church activity in time and funds compared with the Salt Lake Saints was much higher in Guatemala, and church activity suffered accordingly. I recollect that the Guatemalan saints of that era were eager to be part of the full church program and wanted it all for their children, but the financial and time burdens were heavy for them to bear. A servicemen's group in Germany. Mission over, I responded to a call from the U.S. Air Force in order to beat the draft. Less than a month after leaving Guatemala, I found myself a first lieutenant at Bitburg Air Base, Germany. There are no German saints in the area, but we had an American servicemen's group that included 10 families with children, several recently married couples, and a large contingent of single men like myself. Many of the married members lived in civilian housing some distance from the base, and others were stationed in outlying radar warning sites, which required an hour of driving to attend church. There were no church-owned buildings in the area, so we used the air-based interdenominational chapel after the Catholic and Protestant services were. We had a modified version of a consolidating meeting schedule, with Sunday school and sacrament meeting being held consecutively Sunday afternoon. Priesthood meeting and Relief Society were set on weeknights, and primary was held whenever mothers of the dozen young children wanted it. The group made no pretense about sponsoring the full program of the church. We did have the basic church services for adult members, but very few activities. Without youth and few children, the MIN primary played a very limited role in the ward. Music was geared to the limits of one or two who could play the piano and to accompany congregational singing. In spite of the limited program, I recollect that the church members were content with the role of the church in their lives. They met two or three times a week where they had ample opportunity to build relationships and camaraderie as well as study the mysteries of the kingdom. Since consolidation, in 1980 came the firm directive from Salt Lake headquarters that church units throughout the world would schedule almost all meetings according to the same routine. A three-hour block of time in the morning or afternoon on Sunday was set aside for meetings for church members. Members of all ages invade and take occupancy of all parts of the building for priesthood meetings, Sunday school, primary, Relief Society, YMMIA, and sacrament meeting, which are tightly scheduled to efficiently use each of the 180 minutes. Only an occasional Relief Society homemaking meeting plus activities for teenagers are permitted outside the three-hour block. For areas where members' financial resources are limited or where extensive travel is required to attend meetings, the change makes full participation in all segments of the church program a realistic possibility. This reduced time schedule makes available more family time, gospel study time, and personal choice time. However, the reduced time in church has also meant that some previous activities have been reduced or deleted. And we've heard of comments about that, I think very good comments. Congregational suffering has suffered in quality and quantity horrendously, as we no longer have any form of song practice and sing less frequently. Socialization is also significantly reduced because we get together once a week and we're more frenzied to get home from church after a three-hour stay. We don't stand around and talk as much. Gospel study has become more superficial and soundbite size because the meetings are shorter. We still have the same meetings for teaching the gospel, but less time for them. It doesn't require quite as much to be a member of the church now as it did under the previous schedule. For those with easy access to church facilities and resources or participate more frequently if meetings were available, I note a sense of reduced sacrifice and commitment. For those who couldn't handle the previous demands because of the limits in their lives, I suspect they're more at peace with themselves as church members because they're now able to do what good members are supposed to do. About the same time the consolidating meeting schedule was established, the church also revised the way finances of the church were conducted. Previously, members were expected to pay not only tithes, offerings, and missionary support, but were also required to pay for local ward and stake activities, as well as make sizable contributions of cash and or labor when chapels were built and welfare farms purchased. In the established stakes of Zion in this country and other industrial nations, the members usually rose to the occasion and sacrificed what was necessary to build the edifices and carry on the programs. In third world countries, members living at a basic subsistence level had to strain to pay tithing and had a little more for buildings and activities. The central church usually paid the lion's share of the cost of buildings and activities were very infrequent. The impact of the consolidated meeting schedule and central church financing of activities and buildings has been to have the impact of these things has been to have a church which requires much less of members like me in terms of time and money. I rarely feel like I'm asked to sacrifice. However, for the member in the Philippines or in Chile, I suspect he's much more comfortable with being a member before the consolidated meeting schedule. He couldn't. I bemoan the change in the church, not only the consolidated meeting, but as I say, I think there are other things too, particularly in finances and other time demands, that we aren't as, I don't feel as close to the saints as I did before. And I will recount one experience that is seminal in my life. I think that had a great impact on me. When I lived in Boulder, Colorado, the same place that Jerry does the month after we arrived there, they announced they were building a new chapel. And those of you who have gray hair like I do, I think have probably been through this many times too. You remember that. See, it was a ward that was composed of about half students at the time, a lot single and a lot of young married students. And we had to raise $150,000 for the chapel, which probably would be $500,000 today, something like that. I mean, in those kind of terms, I would guess. So we embarked on the way we were going to do it, and there were a lot of do-it-yourselfers in the ward who had built their own homes, and they kind of led the way, and we proceeded to do most of the labor on building the chapel as well as put in what money we could and try to get it from different places. And over the course of a year, I think there was something like 20,000 hours of donated labor. That time, some of it, like mine, was really not very, very efficient. Obviously, I think they spent more time tearing out what I put in than I really spent putting it in. But that's really, but anyway, we had great experiences doing that. I remember particularly one evening I was trying to talk to my daughter about this and explain what happened. I said, I remember it was February, and that day they had erected the masons that were hired had erected a wall, a cinder block wall. It was going to be for the cultural hall and so on. And at night we had to pour the grout down so the wall would stand after, you know, so it'd be a solid wall. And it was about 10 degrees below zero. And it was nighttime, and they had to mix the grout, and we hauled it up with buckets and then poured it down there and got rebar and jammed it down. And we were there from about 6 at night until 11 at night and complaining and moaning about it all. But the bonds that we built doing that sort of thing are still with me, and I have never felt closer to a unit of the church than I did at that time. I remember when we were about 10 months into the building campaign, we were short of money. And the bishop had geared himself up, who had asked for people. People had canceled their vacations to work on the building, had given a lot. He still needed more money, and so he was going to give a talk call, squeeze a little bit harder, give a little bit more. And he said he was geared up for that in the sacrament meeting, and he stood up and just wept as he stood up to speak. And I'll probably cry as I tell the story. Because he said, I had this talk ready. He said, I can't give it any longer. Because he said, when family came into sacrament meeting tonight, this couple who we all knew had very little had come up to him and given him a bag of money, ready coins. And they said, this is the money that we have been saving for 5 years to buy a piano, and we want to give it to the church. And he said, with that, I can't ask for more than that. He sat down. That was in sacrament meeting. Well, we had the building paid for and time to have it dedicated 2 weeks after it happened. But I don't think we have those kind of experiences in the church nearly like we used to. The consolidating meeting schedule change, I don't know how you change that. I was a mission president in Ecuador 10 years ago, and I can't imagine going to anything other than the consolidated schedule for the people down there with the demands that are on them. But somehow we're Joseph Smith made the statement that any religion that doesn't demand the sacrifice of its members is not worth its salt. We're not asking that of people. And I think it's having impact on what's happening within the church.
I certainly see that in my children, just not having the connection to the church that we had. You've done such a beautiful job outlining several perspectives internationally that some of us don't share. I thank Jerry for helping us see what the core issues are. Now we have the problem deciding what to do about it. I did have a couple of suggestions, and I'll ask panelists for second thoughts that they have and then see what comments you have. I'm one who would advocate local control. I think we create problems in West Jordan to solve problems in Japan, and I'm not sure that makes sense. And I would like to see more wards and more stakes make their own decisions about what would work for their members, which is actually what you described when the ward in Germany worked out, long before this was a church-wide policy, worked out what worked for them. And I think we have too many worldwide church-driven decisions that really don't work very well. Probably the best example, again, going to primary, is having all the children graduate in January and not be with their age group, which is just nuts. And I don't know how many of us go from hemisphere to hemisphere often enough to make that consistency necessary. In the best of all possible worlds, ward boundaries and ward buildings would be considered with the actual members in mind. I have lived in Shaker Heights for 20 years, and I am still driving that same 25 minutes to my ward. Ward members live within about a five-minute drive of each other. We can, anything we do in someone's home gets a good turnout because we all live pretty close to each other. But we all make this trek to the building out in the suburbs where I think real estate is deemed more desirable. As a sidelight to that, we still don't have a building that's accessible to downtown members of the church who join the church, come for a little while, but who need to impose on other members to get them there, and sooner or later, because I, in my view, do not have the autonomy to get themselves to meetings using public transportation, simply abandon the whole thing. And I think a little more attention to where buildings are and where members live, and some of the problems we're trying to solve, this long, long drive and this lack of accessibility, maybe to children who would like to go alone, even if parents don't go, could be obviated. I would advocate 2 hours instead of three. I think we need to hit this head on. How do we feel about 3 hours? I would keep Sunday school. I agree that Sunday school would not be the thing that should go. Primary, we already are having MIA on a weekday basis, and I think, it, as Lou pointed out, didn't take them long to realize that teenagers needed some midweek contact with each other. I suggest in my article that primary could have more of an activities orientation, that they could meet as maybe an age group once a month and have an activity just for that age group, and then as a whole primary for an activity, some kind of a party or something, maybe a seasonal activity. And I also had suggested this vacation Bible school idea, which my children have participated in. We have sent our children for many summers in a row to the neighborhood vacation Bible schools. They have loved it. And they've been a couple of hours, maybe 4 days a week, for maybe 2 weeks early in the summertime. And these people have been lovely about understanding that we're Mormons and we're not going to join their Sunday school come fall. They usually give us a call and invite us. But it's very much a neighborhood. Anybody can come. It would be a wonderful missionary tool. I hadn't thought of involving the teenagers, but I know I teach school, and I have a hard time with calling every single Sunday on top of my very busy work week. It would be much easier to consecrate a week or a two-week calling and do a bang-up job with that for a limited period of time. And I think kids could have many of the wonderful benefits that some of us remember so fondly from primary, because it wouldn't be on a Sunday. It would be a time when they could kick back and have more active involvement, less passive involvement. Relief Society and Priesthood's trickier. I don't know that we need to meet weekly. Maybe, and again, Relief Society is already meeting once a month for a work meeting. Many women deplore that anyway because they don't like the format. Maybe we could have a different kind of meeting for Relief Society. One thing my ward's doing that I like a lot, on the fifth Sunday, and that only occurs about four times a year, Priesthood and Relief Society meets together. The young men and young women take over the primary, and we have one joint meeting. And that's really been nice. There might be a way to utilize sort of odd schedule opportunities to get more quorum meetings. I don't know what they do in those meetings that they need to meet weekly. From what I'm hearing from people who attend, they don't either. But maybe we could look at that. What? Any other quick comments from the panel? Hear what people have to say? Come to the mic, please, for people who are listening to this on the way home. And we'll get a long pause. I know how intimidating it is, but if we can do it, you can.
Right. I was just sitting thinking when they talked about the disinvolvement that has occurred. I remember when I was first called to be Relief Society president in the crappiest little ward you can imagine. I mean, we had the weirdest people and the most unbelievable building. It was an old, part of it was an old beer hall. I mean, it was really something. But we took over that the ward was just being what's the word? Started. What do you call it? Organized. Thank you. And we had a weak bishop and some strong other people, and we took over and we did what needed to be done. We decorated that building. I don't want the money back. I'm going to put curtains on those windows. I mean, we just did it. And we had a lot of flack from the stake. Stake didn't like us anyway because we were the poor end of the stake. But the camaraderie that was built in that ward, it was just amazing. The stake castigated us and gave us trouble from minute one until the end, when the ward was finally disbanded many years after we moved out of it. But it was involvement, and it was the right to make decisions for yourself. And I think whenever you've made that comment, that has struck home to me. We need to have some autonomy. The church cannot, 20, 50 men, or however many there are, cannot make decisions for 9 million people. And we know that. And I think if things get bad enough, then even other than Sons donors will learn that. And finally, that will drift up to the 50. And so maybe what we have to do is just keep agitating. But we've got to, I'm disinvolved with my ward now. I never had any input into it. Nobody cares whether I'm there, whether I'm not. We've got to have involvement. And that's what makes us Mormons. Otherwise, we just as well be Episcopalians, right? Anyway, that's the way.
I would echo that as well. I think she's put her finger precisely on what the long-term problem is with the consolidated schedule. Last hour, Arthur Bassett put it a different way, that he'd sat 15 years next to a high priest in his ward who died, and he learned more in the five-minute reading of the obituary than he knew about the man for 15 years. This is the long-term effect of this. And I think we're finding people like that you just spoke to us are falling through the cracks. We don't feel anything for each other. We don't know anything about each other. And I'm not so sure adults are much different than kids why they come to church. They come to see their friends. And that's an integral part of this. And I don't think the existing structure, I'd never go back to what we had before. I think that seems to be pretty much the case. At the same time, I think we better start getting creative in dealing with this slow but serious problem because it is taking its tolls on our members. And I don't see that changing, and I think we better get a little more local autonomy. I think we better start getting some creativity or we're going to be in serious problems for attendance. Thank you.
Oh, we got lots of time. I don't have to be. I won't fill it up. Really, I have very little to add. I can say that John and Jerry and my wife Kathy and I sat one evening after we'd been to a concert or something, I think, together in Boulder, and talked about this. And a lot of what's been brought out today is similar things that we discussed that evening. I see as the main thing that really needs to happen is what others have said here, and that is that there's no reason why every ward has to do it the same way. I mean, there is no reason why that has to be the case. There's nothing to be gained by imposing that kind of structure on an organization as large as the LDS Church. And there's a lot of creativity and a lot of good minds in this church. And there are a lot of variations of situations, culturally, economically, geographically, that would dictate different ways of doing things. And if the church would merely allow us to work locally to build structures of organization in terms of meetings that would fit and work well locally, then we could use those and we could share them with one another. And out of that process, I think we would be able to build a way to build our communities that would be successful. The notion of men and women meeting together, as Jerry said, the Sunday school now is really the only opportunity that adult men and women have to meet and discuss ideas. We need to find additional forums, I think, for us to cross those boundaries. Every year in priesthood meeting when we have discussions among the high priests about what the role of women in the church is, I cringe because there are no women there to participate in that discussion, and who are we to even have that discussion? So things of that nature I think we need to deal with, and if we do it independently, I think that'll be positive.
You guys ought to do that. I don't know. I feel like this is my testimony meeting that I never stand up in front of. Actually, we did have a little girl that came to primary with my daughter and family, ended up joining the church, and that's the last time I bore my testimony after I got to confirm my daughter's best friend, member of the church. They don't come any longer, but that's very often anyway. Came more when they were non-members. I was a missionary in Chile, and I remember back then, it was 76, 77, they were doing experimenting, and my mission president was a general authority, and his whole idea was we want to get the minimal package and that we can take to the four corners of the world, and there was some experimentation done in our mission, and the idea was that every priesthood holder, every family had a father that was a priest, Melchizedek priesthood holder, and that was the church. That was the ideal, and that they would meet in their homes, and then you'd have some, like four or five families that would meet together in one home, and we wouldn't even need to build buildings and all the rest. And looking forward very much a millennial view. You know, we're just getting ready for the second coming, and that's going to happen. Well, it's a few years later, and it hasn't happened yet. My thoughts on that is, though, that thinking back to my experience as a convert in the church, that I was really immersed in Mormon culture and activities, and it was very rich. And I think in the early days of the church, you know, they didn't have any buildings in Nauvoo, and the meeting schedule was a lot different. They didn't need to meet together as often in small towns in Utah because the religion and life were the same. There was no distinctions, no boundaries. But for me, growing up in Chicago, I needed the church. I needed to be the church building. I needed to be around Mormons. I went to BYU because I wanted to be around Mormons more. I didn't have that experience. And I wouldn't have developed the same commitment to the church and church programs and testimony and faith and all the rest, I don't think, necessary, had I not had those roadshows and been to the church as often as I was. And I think now, a couple of weeks ago, I was back in Chicago and went to my sister's church, Christian church services, and it was interesting. During the week, they had all sorts of programs, and it looked a lot like the Mormon church. And they came from all over the Chicago area for this one particular fellowship, and I think they needed that to have the sense of community. They had a sense of community within a community that was very diverse, but they needed that identity. And I don't have any great insights to share. It's just that I feel a great loss of that. And I think that in many countries or places, we will not develop that faith and that identification. I try and think, what's 3 hours on Sunday going to do? Can that develop the faith and commitment necessary for people to commit to go on missions and do all the things and live the lives we want and save up for a temple marriage or, you know, travel to temples and all the rest of the things we need? And I really question it. I think that's the price we pay. Finally, I just want to say, maybe a contribution to this or thoughts, is that what are we becoming? As I see other churches in my community becoming more like what our church used to be and people being much more active there than I feel like I am now, have we got it just backwards? And is it because we're looking forward to the end and we just need to, you know, hurry up and get everybody ready and cut to the basics? Are we cutting our own throats, and is that pathologic? I don't know. Or maybe not the most effective thing.
I just moved back to Salt Lake after spending 18 years in Louisiana. So it's interesting, and we are now in the Yale ward with that beautiful stained glass window that I had heard so much about. It strikes me as interesting. 2 days ago I attended the session on bishops, and Bishop Pingree mentioned how he's been very creative as a bishop in including women in all of his meetings, including, I gather, bishopric meetings and others. Whenever the bishopric meets, there is a woman there, and she has a calling, and she's legitimate. I'm a native of Belgium, and about 10 years ago, the stake was publishing a really nice, very informative little newsletter that I received for several years, and it included pictures. And they had a picture of the Cub Scout camp 1 year. Well, of all the camps they had held in the whole mission, I think. And there were little girls in there, and they're little black and white pictures. But I was looking and taking the magnifying glass. I said, they're girls. They're little girls in there. So the next time I was over there, I talked to a member of the High Council, and I said, you have girls in your Girl Scout camps. And they were little. They were like 5 years old. And, you know, if you have kids in Cub Scouts, you know, we don't believe in Tiger Cubs, and we certainly don't believe in having girls. And he said, oh, yeah. And I said, well, the church program says you can't have girls. And he said, we don't care. And they go for 10 days. I mean, you know, they can't go camping, but what, was it three times a year when they are 10 or 11? 11, I think. They really can't go camping without their fathers until a certain time. So I find it interesting that in parts of the world, they do manage to, in certain parts of the country, we could never have gotten away with what Bishop Pingree does in California and in Louisiana, but that they manage to get around that. So it's not a Bible camp, but it's some way to get around that. On the way to church, and we in Baton Rouge, we moved to a new stake center. We moved 3 years ago in August, and so we were only 5 miles from church instead of the 15 before, which was quite nice. But we passed an Episcopal church just across the street, and they serve coffee and donut at noon. I think a lot of churches do that. Obviously, we wouldn't be serving coffee, but we could certainly have donuts, and you know how hungry the kids are at noon or whenever you're done. And I think that would be a nice thing to do every once in a while, to have some fellowship. As far as alternating between wards, we had one family. The husband was a non-member, and so when we went lock schedule, the mother, they have four children, I think, and two are quite a bit older now, and then there were quite a few years between that set of kids and then two more. And she alternated. We had two wards at that time in Baton Rouge, and she alternated every year. She attended a different ward. Completely lost the two older kids with that. And a year and a half ago, it was December, and I said, well, I guess, Frances, we're not going to see you anymore. And she said, no, she said, the kids who are now the younger ones, who are now teenagers, are insisting that we stay in our ward boundaries because they have their friends, she said, you know, we lost the other two to the church. She pretty much feels that that's a final thing, and she said, I don't want that to happen to the others. When I came in June to buy a house here, my husband's parents live in the East Mill Creek North Stake now, but the East Mill Creek Stake, we're celebrating its 50th anniversary of being organized. And President Hinckley had been invited to come speak since he was president of the East Mill Creek Stake back in the 50s. And my husband asked me if I wanted to go, and we went. And he told a story very similar to the one Bishop Pingree told that usually brings tears to our eyes about the sacrifices that we used to make that we no longer have to make. He talked about requiring a whole lot of the church members in East Mill Creek. They had changed the boundaries. They had lost all but one of their buildings, the old East Mill Creek building on 27th East. They had to buy the stake farm from Canyon Rim, and they had to build several buildings, and they had to build a seminary at Olympus High. And he said members felt like all they were being asked. You know, they had a priesthood meeting, and he said, you know, several of the brethren got up and said, I'm moving. You know, all you're always asking is money. But he talked about their coming together, and I know that's another thing we don't have. We don't have the welfare farms and the welfare projects. When you were out in the mission field, you had different things. We had newspaper route, as we call them in the South. We worked on every Wednesday night, and we sat in somebody's lawn. It doesn't snow in the South, and so unless it rained, we were in somebody's front lawn folding papers for 2 hours and then taking several cars to go throw those papers out. Our children remember that. We got to know each other. You didn't have to think to fold a paper and put it in a bag, so you could carry on conversations, and we don't have those experiences anymore. Well, I've taken enough time. I had a long list. The only other thing I want to say is that, you know, I'm sure you all remember and you read President Packer's talk that Sunstone printed for us, Let Them Govern Themselves. Yes, we're supposed to have more time, but a few years ago my husband served as, I guess, the second counselor in the young men's presidency, and he added up the meetings as a lowly second counselor in the young men's presidency, the meetings he should attend every month. And if you don't take into account the four priesthood meetings, there were 10 other meetings he was supposed to attend. And, you know, that doesn't give us the time to get into the gospel, to meet with our families. And I see that people are gone as much at night as they used to be, especially if you have any kind of a calling. You don't have to be a bishop. You have. So that's what I had to say.
I feel like I'm among friends. I spent a year sabbatical in Belgium in a branch that was so small my children called it a twig. And my battalion headquarters during World War II was in Bitburg, Germany. And I finally forgive a bishop because I was a bishop in the Walnut Creek Stake. And he had all the talent because we had all the young adults and we had the old folks. And I've forgiven you, but reluctantly. But I'm a professional high councilman by trade. I'm the token radical. And I was made a high councilman at the insistence of my bishop, who became a member of the stake presidency. And he said, your first assignment, you've been bugging us for years now about the high priest annual monthly group meeting, the high point of which was the standing roll call. He says, your job is to decide what to do with it. And I said, that's easy. We will get rid of it. And he says, that's the only thing you can't do with it. But in the last three or four years, I have attended a number of meetings of priesthood leadership at which relatively high general authorities, whose names you would recognize, have proudly talked about these experiments. They have noticed them, and they're going around extolling the virtues, and they're saying, why don't we try more things? Now, one thing I've learned as a bishop and as a department chair, and as, please forgive me for this, especially my father, who is an academic, a dean, is that the leadership cannot succeed without these dedicated followers. The bishop could not have built that building had you not been out there. Now, if you want change, when your bishop suddenly gets inspiration because someone says, why don't we try this? Because bishops don't have time to have ideas. They got problems to deal with. They think, if I had an idea, I wouldn't have time to implement it. But if you're willing to stand up and say, Bishop, if you get in trouble and you're called in by the stake president, we want to be there with you. The bishop will say, great, you don't need to come, but just knowing that, I'm ready for you. Fortunately, I've had stake presidents and others willing to experiment. But it's up to those who are the faithful members who want to see change to go along with it. Now, as for me, I have never gotten over the fact that we no longer have the sacrament gym and we no longer have music during the passing of the sacrament. And until we have that, the second coming can't come. But there is tremendous amount of flexibility, but it means that we have to be willing to govern ourselves. We have to have the courage of our convictions. And that means not just saying, well, I have the courage to leave the church. I have the courage to stay and support an innovative bishop. Even if I would do it differently, by golly, at least he's doing something different. Let's see if it'll work. And then when it doesn't, then maybe he'll try my idea.
I miss the daily interaction of religious experience. I just attended my 10-year high school class reunion in Detroit, suburban Detroit, and realized I didn't know anyone there. And as I was flying home, I thought, why didn't I know it? I went to school with these people for years and years. And it occurred to me that Monday nights we had family home evening, Tuesday nights we had something else, Wednesday night we had something else, Thursday night were all the stake activities, Friday night were ward socials, Saturday morning was basketball, Saturday afternoon was when the young women would get together to do something, and then Sundays, of course, we were gone all day long. 30 minutes each way to ward meetings and an hour each way to stake meetings. And so my life really didn't have anything to do with those people I was in school with. It was the people I was in church with. And I treasured that, and I miss it now that all my neighbors are my ward members, and we don't even stop to say hello on the street. And when I wave to people driving through the neighborhood, I get the funniest look, like, well, I talked to you on Sunday. Wasn't that enough? And I think, I don't even know these people. And having just had a child, I now realize the critical nature of this village raising our children, having a trust in our primary leaders and our young men's and young women's leaders, and knowing that there will be this incredible support system there to cocoon our children and help them so they can go to this haven that we call church and find edification there and support and nourishment that I miss now. And I worry about my child. I think we'll move back out in the mission field where there's more of a connection between the saints than I've found in Salt Lake City, which is why I moved to Salt Lake City, was to find Zion, and I've been sorely disappointed. Finally, I think what I'm finding here is that we each need to go out of our way, to express our desire in service, to express our need to be involved. I've lived in this town for 5 years now and have had one calling, and that was when I was in a singles branch and I was returning to activity in the church for the first time in 5 years. And the branch president saw that I was someone who needed to serve, and he took advantage of that. And consequently, the life in me and the life in the branch changed. Every ward I've been to subsequently, I go out of my way to volunteer. If you ever need a substitute teacher, if you ever need someone to help, if you ever need anything and have yet to be taken advantage of. I grew up in a culture where we were so sorely needed that we went to church just to cover for Sunday school or to be there in case they needed someone to play the piano or to lead the music. We felt needed. Here I don't feel needed, and that's saddening to me. Especially since I married a Utah Mormon who doesn't understand the concept of being needed or the need to serve and the need to invest in our church so that when we need it, it's there for us.
Just a couple ideas that I had sitting here. The comment I think that you made about some churches have coffee and donuts afterwards and form a sense of community. If you want to see the dichotomy of the sense of community from one church to another, come up to my ward tomorrow. I go to church at the University Ward at the corner of 2nd South and University Street, just right adjacent to the university. And right next, I go to a wonderful old building that fortunately hasn't been torn down, hopefully never will be, but it has the mosaic of Christ on the front. Perhaps you've seen it if you've spent any time locally here. And it's just adjacent to the Newman Center, the Catholic University Center. And apparently on Sunday, a somewhat liberal Catholic crowd attends there. And tomorrow at 12, come up there and you'll see the difference between the Mormons who were scurrying out to their cars to get the hell out, frankly, after 3 hours of church and they're tired. And then next door, the Catholics who are kind of a Grateful Dead scene. They're hanging out, having coffee and donuts and communing with one another on the front lawn. And they hang out for a long time. And I like to go over sometime, but I'm far too dressed up usually. I have to wear shorts to fit in. They'd know I came from next door. Just what I actually wanted to say was where I work here in Salt Lake City, I work for a group that advocates local governments throughout the state, and I'm working on a project there and also on my thesis at the university. It's the concept of home rule, of people closest to the government closest to the people are those who govern best because they know what the people want. They work with them, they go to church with them, they see them in the malls, they see them in school functions. They know what they need, and I think this works very well with what people are talking about today of we need to have a home rule, if I can use the political concept. Unfortunately, I'm not so hopeful because I look at my ward and stake, and I look at my bishop and my stake president, who are very much line and authority type people, and for them to try something new and different, like let's adapt to what the ward members need, I think would be beyond their comprehension. And so I think so many times this ain't going to happen, if I can use that word. It ain't going to happen unless something radically changes in the church, because we're so consumed with being in lockstep with one another and having conformity. And I wish it were different, but unless we have anarchy or an upheaval here and people demanding this, that let us home rule our stakes, let us home rule our wards, I don't see it happening, unfortunately. So that's just a thought that I have, and maybe perhaps people can throw out ideas of how we can get home rule if that's even possible.
It seems to me that a common thread that we've been talking about is the need for some autonomy and some local creativity, and it also occurs to me that although the brethren here in Salt Lake are pretty authoritarian. I think they're not nearly as authoritarian as the general membership perceives them to be. And for instance, one quick little story. I was the chorister at one time in my ward, and I asked the organist, I said, okay, in between the second and third verse, I really like to have a little interlude. And she said, we're not supposed to do that. I went, what? According to whom? But anyway, I think the trick is overcoming that mentality that so many of us in the general membership have, that we need to and should be commanded in all things, as opposed to using our own spiritual intuition gifts to creatively come up with things that meet the needs of the people in our local area.
I agree with Lou that we've had some themes emerge, and I think this has been a wonderful experience. I've seen so many senses of sharing here that, you know, a mourning almost, things that we know that we've lost, and a sense of what we would like to see happen. I hope a sense of empowerment, though, that we can go back to our own wards and stakes and maybe help some things be different. Thank you all for your comments. This has been a very enjoyable session.